Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for this February 19th. Welcome. We will be hearing two bills today. House File 302 will be our first bill, but before we get to that, I wanted to have a motion to approve the minutes of our last meeting. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to approve the minutes of our Valentine's Day, February 14th meeting minutes.
Thank you very much. Representative Petersburg, is there discussion to the minutes?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Nelson.
Could I get a copy of the minutes and a copy of the agenda? I don't seem to have them in my packet. I think I only got one bill in my packet.
Okay, well, we will... We'll wait on voting till Representative Nelson has had a chance to review the minutes. Okay, he's got it. We got the thumbs up. All in favor of the Petersburg motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Our first bill today is Representative Vogel. This was rescheduled from last week.
Yep.
And I will move, Representative Vogel, your bill to the general register. Now, that members may change pending the amendment that is likely to go on. And I'll move your amendment as well to get the bill into the shape you'd like it considered in. And if you could brief the committee on your amendment, and then we'll consider the bill as amended. Welcome back to the committee. I'm glad you've got your testifiers here. This is a good bill. I'm glad to hear it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Yes, there is an A1, and it replaces the language relative to discussion that had happened in that other body so that it's consistent and comes from Department of Motor Vehicles, who does have somebody here that can speak to that as well. Just got two testifiers, one on the reason for the bill, and then secondly to go through some of the programming issues or whatever might have to happen to have the bill actually work. So, Mr. Chair, I know you have a busy agenda, so if you don't mind, I would just turn it over to the testifier to explain the purpose of the bill, and then you can answer any questions that you might have from Department of Motor Vehicles.
That would be great. Thank you so much, and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Noah McCourt. Mr. Chair, I'm here to speak in support of Senate File 357. The state of Minnesota currently offers a variety of different designations that one can include on a state ID or driver's license. You can get markers on your driver's license to indicate if you are deaf or hard of hearing, if you're an organ donor, if you have a hunting or fishing license, if you're a veteran. But however, you can't currently get that marker on your driver's license that indicates that you have a developmental or other non-visible disability. Disabled drivers are at heightened risk because police officers often do not understand that someone is disabled and how to respond appropriately. Many advocates believe that having this type of designation on a driver's license can help improve interactions in the community and raise awareness as to what true inclusion in the community actually is. One example of this, I have a friend who has a diagnosis of cerebral palsy. He's been pulled over numerous times to the point that he feels he's being harassed. When people see him driving, they often see him drunk. Despite a decade of being pulled over and local complaints, he's been found to have any sort of traffic violations twice for minor traffic violations. It's very possible that this type of developmental disability designation could be helpful in this situation. Also, my friend Kelly Kelsel is a mother of a child with autism. She currently acts as a PCA for him. The Metropolitan Council requires that she carry a state ID for her child when traveling via public transit systems to utilize disability-oriented discounts on fares. While we believe that the requirement from the council is sound, it does not take into account that when one gets a state ID as a minor, it is valid until they reach adulthood. And so the behaviors and the mannerisms exhibited as a child may be different as they age. There have been times when confrontations have resulted between transit employees and or first responders simply due to a lack of awareness of any potential differences. We certainly do have evidence of the challenges faced by law enforcement when interacting with individuals specifically on the autism spectrum. the value of developmental disability markers on licenses in the disability community, I will say, is it's one of those things where it's not without disagreement. Whenever you have that accommodation factor, you do kind of have that 60-40 split there are those who feel that they want to be like everybody else, and that accommodation should be given with or without any release of information. And then there are those of us like me who favor giving individuals and families options, using individualized approaches, and kind of allowing each individual to base their decision on what works for them. I also feel that providing this designation a license will only serve to inform, ultimately help, not hurt, should I ever find myself in such a situation as I have in the past. And it seems to me that the choice to restrict this designation to only physical disabilities alone is really sweeping a potential solution under the rug. In conclusion, people with disabilities do exist. They are in our communities. Developmentally disabled drivers are on the roads, regardless of the legalities and the efficacy. Just from a point of pragmatism and equity, those who are developmentally disabled should have the choice, just like those who are deaf or hard of hearing or physically disabled. And making that so will serve to create opportunities for community inclusion, autonomy, and self-determination. Thank you for your attention to this important matter, and I would encourage you to support Senate File 350. House File 302.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. McCourt. Are there any questions for Mr. McCourt? Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. McCourt and the author, I mean, I think this is a good idea, but I guess the question I have, and when I'm reading the brief I have here, but the question I have, somebody gets stopped, and if they have autism issues and they display these things, how are we going to know? Because the driver's license is going to be in the guy's pocket or the gal's pocket. And until after the fact, the police officer may not know of this. And there are other things, bad things might happen between them being stopped and to the time they get to the driver's license. And it's just a question I have on my mind. And we see all the bad things that happen on the news with sometimes the police stops go bad.
Representative Vogel or Mr. McCourt, do either of you want to respond to Representative Nelson's question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, Representative, there is a person here from Public Safety that I think could address the technicalities of how this would work so that it would address that issue. She's available.
Very briefly, if a representative from the Department of Public Safety could come forward.
And Mr. Chair, don't get me wrong. I think this is a good idea. It's just a question that's in my mind. That's,
This is why we have hearings to, vet these issues. Sometimes we vet them too. But welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Sure. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dawn Olson, and I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services.
Thank you very much, Ms. Olson. Proceed.
Could I just ask that the question be repeated?
Representative Nelson.
Oh, Mr. Chair, and the question I have is, I support what's going on with this bill, but as I'm reading in this thing here, talks about my brief, talks about a family where the son drives a truck for the family, and he has some issues with autism and sometimes acts out with strangers. And if a police officer stops them, the license is going to be in the pocket, and how is the police officer going to know that the person is not just acting out for other reasons, but does have this issue? It may not happen until after something maybe very bad happens that they actually get a look at the driver's license.
Ms. Olson.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm not the law enforcement expert, so I can't really speak to how law enforcement would interact. I can just say that the data would be shared on the record, and so once law enforcement was able to get to the driver's license and pull that up, they would be able to see that indication on the record. How they do that, though, I can't really speak to.
Thank you. Any further questions of either the author or Mr. McCourt? Representative Rundbeck.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just looking at line 1.8, There's the matter of a mental health condition as well, and who determines that, or how does that designation show up on the driver's license, and is there diagnosis needed, or just seems a little bit unclear.
I see Mr. McCourt is back with us. Would you like to take for that question, Mr. McCourt?
As far as what is the documentation that would be required?
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. McCourt, is it something I would self-report that would go on the driver's license, and sort of what are the guardrails or guidelines for?
As the bill is written, it would be currently self-reported. One of the things that had been discussed with the Senate in the Senate hearing was this kind of question as far as what documentation, and I would argue that there is really no benefit, there's no cheaper prices, there is legitimately nothing being offered as a result of this designation on a driver's license. It's truly informative.
Representative Rombeck?
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, we don't know all the purposes that this would be used for. I mean, is it to count, or is it to, you know, will there be data collected based on people then indicating that on their driver's license? It just seems a bit vague, and so I wonder if it's something to be worked on later.
At this point, I know that the goal of the legislation is to be sheerly informative.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, that was what?
Representative, can you just repeat?
Mr. Chair, I said at this point that the point of the designation on the driver's license is to be purely informative.
So, in other words, no data.
So, no data collection, like I said, there's not going to be a discount offered on licenses. It's simply to be purely informative.
Hey.
I just think that we ought to have more conversation, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions or concerns? So two issues here before we move this out. One, members, is that we have the A1 amendment before us. I wanted to defer action until we had our testifiers per the request of the author. So is there any discussion to the A1 amendment? You did present it, Representative Vogel, so I don't know if you have any concluding comments about the amendment before we take action.
Mr. Chair, the amendment was drafted relative to discussion in the other body, consistent with what DMV felt would be better language to make this. I think the key is here to remember that this is purely voluntary. It can be revoked at any time, and as a testifier said, it's informational. It isn't something that probably a lot of people are going to want to volunteer to put on their driver's license if they don't feel they have the condition. Why would you? It is only going to be available to the law enforcement. It won't show up on somebody's driver's license as a condition like, say, corrective lenses or whatever would. So when this is put on there, it's informational for law enforcement, and it's to the person's advantage to put it on there because they might have some type of a event in their life where it would be helpful for that law enforcement officer to see that. So the key is it's voluntary, it's discreet, and it can be taken off at any time by the person that put it on. So it's informational. It is not like the other conditions that you might see on there, such as free transit or whatever else. There aren't any qualifying conditions like that.
Representative Joachim, and then we'll bring this to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vogel, just so I understand, it basically is like someone purposely or intentionally or willfully themselves putting on a medical alert bracelet so folks know. So this is kind of an equivalent to having a medical alert bracelet on your ID so that the officers that are stopping know there may be something going on and can be of better service. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chair and
Representative Vogel.
Yeah, that's what this intended to do. It's to be informational, voluntary, and discreet.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All right. All those in favor, I will renew my motion to approve the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. So we now have House File 302 as amended before us. Discussion? Okay. Because of this amendment being added by rule or custom and usage, we do need to move this to the Ways and Means Committee now. And we will await a fiscal note there. One is not prepared, but one has been prepared in the Senate. So just wanted the committee to be clear on that. So the motion is not to go to the General Register. We're now heading to Ways and Means. So I'll renew my motion that House File 302, as amended, be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. You're on your way to Ways and Means. Thank you for bringing this good bill to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. And we will now revert to House File 861.
That was very good.
Representative Hansen, welcome back to the committee. I don't know what we're going to do next Tuesday if you don't have a bill before us. It's going to be unusual.
I can write more.
I have a feeling this is not the last Menlar's bill we're going to see this session. But it is an important one, and welcome back to the committee. Representative Hansen, I will move that House File 861 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And if you could, I know you also have an amendment. So if you want to speak to the bill and your amendment, that would be in order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And House File 861 is the third in our series of Menlar's bills. I think a key thing to look at when you're looking at 861 is it is expending money in this fiscal year. So it is a deficiency appropriation to try to catch things up, both for Menlar's, and when the amendment is considered, it would also provide catching up the costs that the deputy registrars had. So I actually have a PowerPoint that I've been working on. Actually, I haven't been working on it.
That would be way above and beyond the call of duty. Members, I think what we should do here is have sort of an overall presentation and discussion of the deficiency portion of our of this bill, and then we will consider the amendment after that. And I know that there are other amendments that relate to deputy registrars as well. So why don't we proceed with the presentation?
Yes, and I have with me representatives from the administration who will go through this PowerPoint.
Welcome back to the committee, Deputy Commissioner. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Cassandra O'Hearn, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Public Safety. Let's just figure out how to advance. Let's try this. All right. The goal of Menlar's, obviously, is to deliver Minnesotans with the driver and vehicle services that they expect and deserve. And that hasn't been what their experience has been to date. And there have been many hearings, and so I don't want to repeat everything, but as you have heard from deputy registrars and your constituents about their experiences in getting their vehicle and driver services, this has been particularly true since July 2017 with the rollout of Menlar's. The Department of Public Safety hears these concerns and are committed to resolving them. But for the services to function well, there are different components. It takes a computer system, and it takes individuals to then process the work. And those individuals come in different forms. Some of them are deputy registrars or driver's license agents. And then there's also a need for driver vehicle services staff as well. And the system does not work for the Minnesotan unless all three of those areas are functioning well. So what's the current experience? The current experience, as you know, is that deputy registrars and your constituents and Minnesotans have prolonged wait times on the phone. When they try to call DVS for help in a variety of different reasons, they either cannot get through or they sit on hold. Responses to emails also take a long period of time. There have been months-long delays to receive driver's licenses and, at times, vehicle titles. Although vehicle titles are moving, they're still over a month delay at this point. Had to wait months to get exams scheduled throughout Minnesota. And then, of course, you've heard about the gaps in the functionality and all of the workarounds that deputy registrars and DVS staff have to do in order to process the work for Minnesotans.
Excuse me, we have a question from Representative O'Driscoll.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to get on the list when we're done with the
presentation. Oh, okay, good.
That's all.
Why don't we do that?
Thank you.
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn go through the, it's a relatively short PowerPoint, and then we'll take questions at that point. Thank you, but you'll be first on the list, Representative O'Driscoll. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. So there's a way forward. And what is that way forward? It's to have the staff and the system investments that are necessary to ensure, again, that all prongs are working, to provide the deficiency funding that's needed yet this fiscal year to continue the MNLAR's progress and complete the FAST driver services system, to address the DVS customer service staff shortages, to improve those turnaround times to support the Minnesotans who are seeking the services, and to deliver the necessary tools to provide the increased customer service necessary for both, again, citizens and deputy registrars. Of course, way forward costs money, and that's why we're here. This is a summary slide to show how it breaks down. $5.5 million to FAST to finish off their system. We refer to it as phase two. $6.8 million for the MNLAR's system, and then $3.4 million for DVS staff in order to process and get those turnaround times down to an acceptable level. What do you get for the money? The $5.5 million for FAST is going to provide various different features, some of which the deputy registrars have been asking for. The first one on the list is the driver's license agent scanning. Right now there's a pilot project going on, and we have heard from those deputy registrars that are doing scanning that they like it, and they would like, and others would like to participate. But right now FAST needs that $5.5 million to make good on that contract and be able to provide those services, as well as some other necessary items that are just needed to finish that system and ensure that it is ready to do everything that it can. One of the things that points out here is connecting the driver and the exam systems. You know, right now, if somebody takes a driver's test, then it needs to manually get entered into the FAST. This will allow those systems to communicate. And any time you can communicate directly, technology, that removes people having to do it. That removes errors. It also works quicker. So on the vehicle system side, that's broken down as well. You know, how does the $6.8 million get broken down? Most of it's for contractors, $3.6 million on contractors. There are data contractors as well, and those are really working with the data of the system with respect to how the system on conversion and the information that's in there, what needs to be cleaned up. And that is always true. When you take a system and you convert it, you have data conversion issues. So those will continue to speed those up. There's $81,000 for business analyst and user acceptance testing, something that has been needed. And the OLA has talked about the importance of user acceptance testing and dedicated staff to provide those business requirements to the technology contractors who are developing the system. And then there's additional equipment costs. And then for the driver services staffing. Now, this slide, hopefully you can see it better in your handout. It gets kind of small, but we provided, and I apologize for that, we broke it down so you could see exactly how many staff, what type of staff they are, what are the positions, what were the assumptions about how many months. Because this is a deficiency, not all of these, you know, it takes time to hire them. So some would only be hired in June. Others would be hired right away. And you can see those numbers under the number of months there with respect to what it is. But what it really breaks down to is increasing the title and registration staff that's necessary in order to get those titles processed more quickly. The deputy liaison positions, those are the individuals who work directly with deputy registrars who answer their questions, whether it's on the phone or travel out into the field to work directly with them. So those staff would be increased the ability to get out to the various deputy registrars' offices. It increases the number of driver's license issuing staff. There is a significant backlog in real ID and enhanced driver's licenses, as well as standard driver's licenses right now. The system is working and processing those, but there is a backlog, and so people are having to wait, sometimes up to, you know, several months to get their driver's license. Compliance, those are individuals, evaluators, and that is where there are significant wait times, both on the phone to get to evaluators and then for individuals needing to meet with an evaluator to get their license either back or to determine whether somebody, whether it's due to competency, age, those types of things, need to have their license taken away. And then disability parking certificate processing staff, and refunds, as well as, of course, the PIC, and that's the Public Information Center. That's the call center. So what are the targets? There are measurable targets for each one of these, and that's title turnaround, less than 30 days. And the staff that the department has proposed will get to that. Driver's license turnaround, 21 days or less. Call center wait times, less than 5 minutes. And disability certificate, parking certificates, less than a 30-day turnaround time. And with that, questions, and hand it back over to the author.
Thank you for the presentation. Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn, we'll start with Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this might be a little out of scope, but it's something that has occurred to me when we're talking about the challenges that we have with the design and the effectiveness and efficiency of the MNLAR system. With license tab renewals and tag renewals, do we have any backlog in those? I know we've had some issues with title transfers and those kinds of things, but do we have any backlogs in people being able to get their annual tabs and certificates updated?
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, no, there are no backlogs with respect to your annual tab renewals. So if you go to a deputy registrar, those are provided to you right on the spot. If you utilize either online or in the mail, those are turned around quickly now. There was a time right at the beginning of rollout where there was a backlog there, but the backlog has been resolved and those are moving normally and quickly now.
Mr. Chair, the reason I asked that question was I had heard that there was a backlog in the transition on the system. It's good to hear that that's caught up. I just guess I spend an awful lot of time on the road and I still see vehicles that don't have current tabs on them. So in the back of my mind, it's like, oh, gee, I wonder why that is. And I've helped clarify that it's not because of the system that's delaying it, maybe from other things.
That's correct.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome to committee. Nice to see you again. First, I would like to delve a little bit into the FAST contract. Can you remind us of why that $5.5 million, is it the delay in completing that contract? Why was that change made? Just to remind this committee of why that happened.
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, so the original contract that the state had with Fast Enterprises had a payment of $5.5 million that was deferred. They agreed to have an amendment and have that $5.5 deferred so that the that money was used to continue the development on Minlars to get those fixes in as quickly as possible for Minnesotans and deputy registrars.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just to make it clear, that was part of the original contract, and they agreed to kind of break the contract into two pieces, and you used that those resources in-house then within DVS to try to continue the development of Minlars. Is my stating that correctly?
Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson. Yes, FAST did agree to amend the contract. And with respect to using it in-house, those funds were used to pay for the contractors. Minlars is predominantly staffed by contractors.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. O'Hearn. So those contractors are on individual contracts with DVS. Is that correct? Or
Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you. They contract with Minute Services. And there are, you know, companies, so each individual contractor doesn't. So, for instance, the quality assurance contract with Sogetti, they provide a number of individuals under that one contract. So it's not that every single individual working on it has an individual contract.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I misspoke there a little bit. But I think the point here is that that these are not actual state employees that are doing most of this work. All of this work is being contracted out in one, virtually all of it, in one form or another, whether it be with an individual or a company. This programming work that's being done both on the driver's license and Minlars is being done by contracted workers.
Deputy Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, that's correct.
Thank you for that.
Representative Torkelson.
One other quick topic I'd like to dive into a little bit. You know, I'm looking at your last slide here with the variety of target metrics on it. What I don't see is a target metric on there that would ease the workload for our deputy registrars. Does any of this work that's being done to improve the system, is it actually going to improve the experience for citizens at the desk and for the people that are conducting these transactions with the public? Because anecdotally, I'm hearing that even the most recent fixes in version 1.15 have not really made it easier for people to transact these business transactions. Actually, they're still taking an inordinate amount of time at the desk to get this work done. Can you clarify that for me?
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson. The system has to continue to evolve in order to ultimately ease the pain for deputy registrars. So the focus has been, if you recall, when the rollout occurred in July of 2017, for instance, at that point, the system itself went down a lot, just did not work, was not available. Minute and contractors have worked very hard to get that system so it is up and available. Now, that's step one, right? You need a system that's up. They have done, Representative Torkelson, you sit on the Oversight Committee, and those quarterly reports have reported the progress with respect to the system uptime, which has been substantial. That is helpful to deputy registrars. Are there still workarounds? The answer to that is yes. 1.15, the most notable was the ability to transfer specialty plates. But there were some other functions that were in that system as well. But it was not designed to get rid of all of those workarounds. And the workarounds, what that means is there is a way to get the transaction done. But it's not the easy path, right? It's not the way that we hope, and eventually all of the pieces will come together so that that easy path occurs. But the focus has been to close the gaps so that the functionality, whatever it is that needs to happen, actually is able to be done. If, for instance, specialty play transfers could not do that before, now you can do it. There are other transactions which can be done today, but not in the most efficient way. Requires workarounds. And as the system continues to develop and tune, those are the areas where the big improvements will happen, because the number of things that you just can't do has been greatly reduced. Then they need to start working on, all right, you can do it, takes too long. How do we now make those, you know, the efficient and tuning of the system? And that will continue into the future. Right now the focus has been make sure the system works and the functions are there.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. I guess my final comment for now is that it'd be nice if one of our goals on this sheet was actually making the work easier for the people that are doing the work, that are out there facing the public every day trying to get these transactions complete. I see, you know, a number of days of delay listed, but I don't see anything listed here that says we are working hard to try and make this system more usable for the people that use it every day. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Koznick, and then Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Deputy Commissioner. Thanks for being back here, and maybe to the author, too. Last year when we were discussing this issue, we talked a lot about the urgency to provide some funding to get this going and the use of contractors, that if we didn't provide the funding last year, contractors would be going on to other projects and stuff. The contractors that you have listed on here, are these new contractors that you plan on hiring, or are these current people that we have employed that you're going to extend their contracts? What is this? Can you share some light on that part?
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, most of the contracts, they would like to continue, and there is an urgency with respect to this funding. We run into that exact same situation again, that the contractors, if we cannot continue their contracts, will go elsewhere. Then what will happen is if there is funding at some later point, those contractors that know the system, that have already been working on the system, will have left, and you will be forced to hire new individuals who don't know the system. And then it takes a period of time for them to get up to speed. And we, in fact, saw that last year, where the individuals, it did delay the development of Minlars.
Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then finally, you know, what assurance can we give our folks back home that providing this funding here today or in the next couple days or weeks, what assurance can we give them that this will finally fix the Minlars nightmare?
Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I can tell you that with this money and only this money, it will not fix the system. However, this is what is needed now to continue the development and continue to stabilize that system. Individuals, and I believe if you talk to deputy registrars, they will say it is better today than it was. We're not there. We need to continue to invest in both the system and the individuals, be they deputy registrars or driver vehicle services staff, to process this work coming forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, one more.
Representative Koznick.
I appreciate the answer. Very honest. When is the end? You know, we're obviously frustrated. We've got people back home that can't believe that it's been 10 years, well over $100 million. They're frustrated. They can't get their plates, their motorcycle tabs online. Those types of issues are well documented. What is it going to take? Because, you know, the committee's been meeting, and, you know, is there a definitive answer? Is there a dollar amount? Is the end? Can we see the tunnel? The end of the tunnel?
Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I hope that we see the end of the tunnel, right? I've been sitting here, as many of you have been sitting here, and we've been talking about this system that did not deliver as was expected, and needing to do that. The ongoing funding and the timing of that will be the focus of, I believe, another hearing. With respect, I was unable to hear the governor's budget release today, but there will be further conversations and information coming forward about the full amount of resources necessary to finish this system and maintain it, provide ongoing maintenance and support, as well as appropriately staffing it for those individuals that need to do it, be it deputy registrars or driver vehicle services.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll leave it at that, but appreciate your answers.
Thank you, Representative Kozak. Representative Petersburg and then Representative Elkins is on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to really talk a little bit more about the target experience that we see on one of your slides. And the thing that saddens me, I think, the most about that is the fact that here's another example in which the target, in other words, the only ones that you really want to measure, has to do with what's happening up here in St. Paul. And yet the largest arm of DBS, which is the deputy registers, have been left out of that target experience and what's there. And so by leaving that out, which is the actual time in which the average constituent out there is dealing with DBS, is not listed as a target, is really sad that we don't and haven't considered that. So, for example, if pre-modernization, it took 5 minutes to come in and change out a driver's license title or a car license title, and now it's 45 minutes, and you don't even have a target to get back to 5 minutes, you're really increasing the frustration at the local level. And so I guess I'm really disappointed that you didn't even consider that as a target that you would want to measure and improve on. And why isn't that, since that arm is really your most working part of your process?
Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. It's not that we didn't consider it, and I do hear your point, and the next time that we present, I will make sure that we have target experiences here that have been developed in consultation with the deputy registrars. We have an executive steering committee, and we've been working with the deputy registrars in order to develop the what are their priorities, what do we need to do as far as communication with respect to whether it's a workaround, how to determine which technical things to do first, and do those priorities. And we will work with them to identify target metrics and present that to you.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will look forward to that, because I appreciate that report when it comes, because without that, we really don't know how we're doing in the perception of the average constituent out there. So thank you for doing that, and I look forward to that fairly soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got several questions here. First, on the slide, I guess it's number 8, that discusses the target experiences. We're saying that the title turnaround is 40 days. The driver's license turnaround is currently 90 days. How much of that is of that elapsed time is spent in the national or federal time, part of the process? So for titling, you have to go out to the national vehicle title system at one point. For driver's licenses, you have to submit the information to the federal government for real ID. Is that a big chunk of the time, or is that relatively minor?
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn.
I was just, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I was just doing a quick check to make sure that my facts are accurate. I do not believe that the federal checks are the result of the backlog. What happened was that there was a backlog at the time that we rolled out the new driver services in October, and just trying to, you know, get what was already in the queue at the time of the new system and now processing. Individuals who had applied prior to the October 2018 driver system have been processed. We are now processing entirely within the new system, but it is not. It is a staffing issue.
So it's strictly staff.
Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry about that. So at this point, it's strictly staffing. We're not expecting, other than staffing, that that further driver's license system or MNLARS enhancements would by themselves reduce those turnaround times.
Mr. Chair, Representative, for the driver services component and the system developed by FAST, that system is working quite well. And you can ask deputy registrars for their experience, but I believe that's what they will tell you. Mm-hmm. The added components that the federal law does require for Real ID and for the enhanced requires that DVS staff review the documentation. And so in order to review that documentation, it is a staffing issue.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, so following up on that, so that this is not work that could be done at the deputy registrar's office when the customer is in front of them. And this is something that the deputy registrars have to enter the information, and it has to have a human being in DVS review the information before it can be approved.
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that is correct under current federal law.
Okay, thank you. And then continuing,
Representative Elkins.
I did have about a 45-minute conversation with my own deputy registrar in Bloomington on Friday, Kim Wilson, and that's exactly what she said. It's things are, in general, working much, much better now. But I do want to, describe some feedback I've had from her and representatives of the larger, deputy registrars association and people with MNIT as well, is that in the design of these systems, the intention is to put more of the workload actually to the front end at the point of entry, get things right as it's entered, and I see the architect nodding her head, and there should be some expectation in the overall scheme of things that relatively speaking, work should be shifting from the back office at DVS to the registrars. And that in addition to the compensation we're discussing as part of this bill, there should be some adjustment to the rates of compensation that they're receiving for the time, reflecting the time they're spending on each application. And that's appropriate from a data governance point of view. I'm an IT guy. You always want the data to be entered correctly at the point of entry instead of going back and correcting it later. So we should consider that to be a feature, not a defect. I see nodding heads. And I just wanted to, the last thing, and then we can go on to someone else, but I just want to reiterate that when you're trying to do an application development and you're plagued by constant turnover in the developers, that is incredibly disruptive, incredibly saps the productivity of the entire team. The management of the team ends up spending all their time doing interviews and onboarding, and if you can maintain the continuity of the staff and keep using the people who have learned the requirements and are familiar with the development of the system, you're going to be much, much more productive. It would be criminal to keep causing this kind of disruption by these constant interruptions in the funding stream.
Thank you. I don't see anyone else on the list at this point. So, Representative Hansen, I think it would be in order now, if I were to, I will move your A7 amendment. I don't know if you would like to speak to the A7 amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. And Mr. Chair, so if members could look at the A7 amendment, and I may ask for an assist here from Representative Kosnick, because he did help with a couple of the provisions that are in the A7. They were his idea. So I'm going to go through the Section 4. The appropriation is $10 million, again, from this fiscal year, appropriated from the general fund to the commissioner management budget for reimbursement grants to deputy registrars. And this grants must be made by June 30th, 2019. Again, in the keeping that this is a deficiency or a supplemental bill to try to get dollars out to the deputy registrars for reimbursement for their expenses that occurred with the rollout of MNLARS. The aid distribution is what we talked about last week, that I think Representative Torkelson was a model, that you had 10% of available funds allocated equally to all deputy registrars, 45% of available funds allocated proportionally based on the number of transactions during the rollout, and then 45% based on the number of transactions prior to the rollout. Go to the second page. It has, again, calculations relating to that. And then on subdivision 4, we have documentation that there were increased costs. So back to your comments earlier, Mr. Chair, about looking at the disaster model, that this is a technological disaster, so we want to do a reimbursement, so there's at least some protection for the taxpayer there of that this is a reimbursement for either costs or for gone revenue. And then we have the conditions. So maybe Representative Kosnick, if you want to talk about Subdivision 5 and Subdivision 6.
Thank you.
Representative Kosnick.
Thanks. Mr. Chair, I apologize that you didn't get the opportunity to offer an amendment to the amendment.
That's okay.
Representative Hansen, I appreciate you incorporating this. We talked a little bit about, in terms of having a reimbursement offered to the deputy registrars, it is helpful to their partners with us in the public to provide the services that they do. So we would like to condition this that they continue to operate for at least 12 months after receiving any funds. And then in Subdivision 6, after talking a little bit, the state does have some immunity from the things that we do, a statutory immunity and official immunity, kind of technical language. We wanted to put it in the statute as a condition of immunity from any future suits, just to indemnify and protect the taxpayers. And I appreciate that you have that in there. It's not likely that it would be used, but we never know what the future potentially holds. So I think it's an important safeguard for the taxpayers as we kind of go forward in this somewhat unprecedented payouts. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Proceed, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I would ask support for the A7 amendment. I think it provides a method for simply providing support for the deputy registrars who provide services to Minnesotans for the challenges they have gone through with the rollout of MNLARS while providing taxpayer protection for the distribution of those dollars. And that
Thank
it could
you,
be done
Representative
quickly.
Hansen. So discussion to the A7 amendment, it's somewhat similar to House File 635 that we heard a week ago. There's a few changes, but generally the idea is to get money out quickly to the deputy registrars. Discussion, questions? Okay, seeing none, I will move. Oh, Representative Torkelson, sorry.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I didn't wave briskly enough.
Yeah, that's okay.
Well, thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing this amendment forward. It's too bad it wasn't part of the thought process when you first put your bill together. And I'd just like to remind folks that this is an issue we tried hard to address last year. We had a bill that would have brought forward $9 million that was vetoed by the governor, and that veto was upheld by your caucus on the House floor. We had another $5 million for deputy registrars. It was in the supplemental bill that was also vetoed by the governor. I don't want to call this too little too late because it is substantial, and I'm very happy that you're bringing it forward, but it is a bit late in the game. This should have happened sooner, and I regret that it didn't. We've seen from the OLA's report on Minlars that virtually all the fault for these problems falls in the lap of the administration. It's my hope that a new administration will address these issues appropriately.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and members, I would encourage everyone to read the legislative auditor's report from last week. I know members often have limited time during the rush of session, but if you want a good look at what happened, I think the importance here is we look at what moves forward and that this is a quick model, Mr. Chair, and I was in front of you last week with essentially the same proposal. I believe the $10 million that is in front of you really didn't come out in the governor's budget until today. So the amendment was offered yesterday, a little bit ahead of that. So what we're trying to do is anticipate those expenses because we know that we want to provide support for the deputy registrars who provide services to all Minnesotans. So I would ask for your support and encourage moving forward.
Okay. Any further discussion of the A7 amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. We have the A7 amendment now incorporated. Now I see that there are several other amendments, and I think they're mostly, are these yours, Representative Torkelson?
The A3?
No,
the A3.
We have an A3, we have an A6, we have, yes, there's also an A3 and an A4.
The A3 is mine, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
I would like to consider the A3 amendment, Representative Runbeck. If you can proceed, please explain your amendment to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, the amendment before you would reduce the salary by 20% for each of the key positions that were really right in the heart of the issue, the problem that came up and occurred as a result of the Minlars issues, and it's being described as disaster, so I think that's probably an adequate term. But these, you know, very top brass in our state agencies had the maximum responsibility to make this project go. And it's not a matter of debate whatsoever that it was in the design, it was in the planning, in the development of the system, that there was a tremendous failure of leadership and a tremendous failure of using best practices, to follow basic management practices. And I think the concern on the public is that we heard one person, I guess, lost their job, but tremendous pain, tremendous problems that occurred. And really, there's no punishment. There's no pain for the people who caused the problem. I mean, that just is not right. And so this is simply saying that for those people at the very top, there is an issue where we will reduce the salaries. That seems like a good start. And that's basically the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Discussion, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm assuming we all know that there's just been an administration change, and commissioners and deputy commissioners and assistant commissioners and division directors, it is surely not going to be possible to track. And if this is intended to hold people accountable, they are no longer there. I mean, I remember some of those names, but they are no longer there, and they are certainly not listed here. This was not intended as punishment, but it certainly seems like punishment. We've got to punish someone, so let's name some titles, and we don't really care if it falls on the right person or holds anyone accountable. But the timing of this is off.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the Representative Hausman and I are thinking alike because I read the Minlars report all the way through and a couple of times, and this goes back to the very beginning when this was originally, when Menlars was originally passed to go forward. So are we going to go back and dock Governor Pawlenty? Are we going to go back and dock all his commissioners back then and ask them to pay us back? Because they're the ones that caused the problem. It's not the people that are currently in these positions. And so, I mean, it's like we're punishing somebody we've got to go after. We've got to strike at somebody, so we're going to strike at the people that are there, the people that are now trying to fix this problem that was caused by past people, and we're going to punish the people that are now. I think this is wrong-headed and short-sighted.
Representative Mel, thank you. Oh, Representative Runbeck wants to respond.
So, Mr. Chair, I would just, you know, note that if you read the amendment, you'll see that the salary change would be effective July 1st, 2019. So there's no going back. That's not what it does. But I think in recognition that the public has lost tremendous trust in state government's ability to really roll anything out that is a complex, massive system, there's no longer trust on the part of the public out there. And I imagine even the workers in the department have lost a lot of trust in the fact that these projects can go forward without massive problems. So I think it's an important statement to make, and that's why I'm doing the amendment.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Nelson, and then we have Elkins, Torkelson, Cagle, and Joachim. And I would say we have several other amendments as well, and I guess I have to make the customary announcement that we have the room at 6 tonight if people want to continue. So just an FYI. Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chair, and that's the point I was trying to make. These salary deductions go into effect on July 1st of this year. We're not going back and punishing. If we want to punish people, punish the people that made the mistakes, we're not getting at those people. They're going to get off scot-free. Again, going all the way back to when this started under the Pawlenty administration, we're going to punish the people that are there now that are trying to fix the problem. And that is wrong-headed, because it's not, I mean, if we want to get our pound of flesh and feel good about punishing somebody for making mistakes, we shouldn't be punishing the people that are now, that are new people, that are trying to fix this problem. That's not what this amendment does. What this amendment does is punish those people and doesn't go after the people that actually caused the problems.
Thank you, Representative Elkins.
Yeah, just the same comment. Basically, none of these current office holders are the people who are responsible for what wrong with Menlars. They're the people who are trying to fix it now.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we know the likelihood of this amendment passing. But at the same time, I think there's an important point to be made here. Number one, I keep hearing the Pawlenty administration. If 8 years of the Dayton administration isn't long enough to fix this, then perhaps Democrats should quit running for office. Because 8 years isn't long enough, or maybe we just need to not run if that's the case. This is land solidly in the lap of the Dayton administration. There's no doubt about it. It's clear in the auditor's report. Yes, the project was started in the Pawlenty administration, but to somehow claim that you can blame the failure of this on Tim Pawlenty is absolutely ridiculous. We do have a problem here with administration. I wish we could go back and claw back the wages of the people who are at fault. We can't do that. I realize this is symbolic. But we need to do things differently around here. One of the biggest flaws with this program is that we did not evaluate the business processes involved with Menlars before we started writing the program. We wrote things into this program that were archaic and virtually impossible to program quickly and accurately. So you have things like this base value calculation that's still part of statute that's been tried to be worked into this Menlars program, and it just doesn't work because the administration of this program was not done properly. If you don't evaluate your business processes before you start writing software, something is seriously wrong. Yes, we can't, penalizing people that are currently in office in these administrative positions is not going to fix Menlars, but pointing out that the administration of this whole process is flawed, I think, is absolutely appropriate.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. And Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is
kind of to piggyback on Representative Torkelson's point, we do need to do things differently. And in order to fix the problem, we need to attract top talent. We need smart people. And so I think this amendment would probably deter the best applicants from wanting to take these positions. And so I think it would be kind of, it would harm us more than it would help us.
Okay. Representative Elkins, quickly.
Quickly. I'd just like to respond to Representative Torkelson's comment by observing that I read the report on Menlar's accuracy very closely as well. And a big reason why it can't be programmed accurately is because the specifications that are written into the law are impossible to execute. So there is a major part of culpability for us in this as well. Some of the issues that were highlighted there cannot be fixed without changing legislation.
Hey, Representative Runbeck, last word, and then we'll take a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think that's really well taken, Representative Elkins. You know, if you were planning a system like that, you would have talked to the legislature to find out just what do we need? Do we need this still, you know? So I think, yeah. I hear folks, and I think it's an important statement to make. We need our top brass in our state agencies to be held accountable. I realize this isn't the perfect solution, and so I will withdraw the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Thank you, members, for the debate. And we also have a similar amendment, I believe, the A4. Is that yours as well?
No.
Okay. Who owns the A4 amendment? Okay. The A4 is withdrawn or not offered. A5, this is a $27 million.
Let's go to the A6.
Okay. A6 is now before us. Is that yours, Representative Torkelson?
Thank you. I'll move the A6, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson moves the A6 amendment. To the amendment, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you. This will be fairly short, Mr. Chair, but we probably will take a vote on it. The $10 million that's in Representative Hansen's bill certainly is a step in the right direction. We have information that indicates that the real damage to deputy registrars is more in the $27 or $28 million category. We think that at least going halfway with a $14 million appropriation would be a more appropriate step to take at this point in time. So, Mr. Chair, I speak in favor of the A6 amendment.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe if staff could help as the way the amendment is drafted, if it would have the result of replacing the A7 amendment, which was adopted, or would it be in addition to the A7, which was adopted?
Mr. Burris, want to take a crack at that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, I would read this as cumulative. So the effective adoption of the A6, given that the A7 has already been adopted, would be deputy registrar aid distributed with a total amount being $24 million.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think you heard testimony earlier from the deputy commissioner that there will be additional budget proposals coming for the biennium. This is a deficiency payment that is $10 million. I think the fiscally responsible position right now is to vote no on the A6 amendment. The A7 amendment would be retained and provide $10 million instead of $24 million.
Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call on the A6.
Okay. Roll call has been requested on the A6. Is there further discussion? Members, I would also concur with Representative Hansen and urge a no vote. This money has been is in the governor's budget, and it's general fund money, and I think it would be wise and prudent to move this money out quickly. And if there are further issues, we will address those. But right now, this is budgeted money. I think there's some broad consensus that this is a figure that is similar to what we had last year, and we should move quickly and get this done. So for that reason, I urge a no vote. And if there's no further discussion, Ms. Stephen will take the roll.
Chair Weinstein?
No.
Representative Tabke?
No.
Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Representative Bernardi?
No.
Representative Elkins?
No.
Representative Hausman?
No.
Representative Heinrich? Representative Cagle?
No.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Aye. No. No.
He's sitting on that side. It's just that.
Eyes okay.
Yeah.
Yes, it's okay.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Aye. And I do mean aye.
Representative Petersburg?
Yes.
Representative Richardson?
No.
Representative Runbeck?
Aye.
Representative West?
Yes.
Representative Wolgamott?
No.
Representative Joachim?
No.
There are 6 ayes and 11 nays. The motion does not prevail. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Are there any further amendments that for consideration? Okay, we have now one final vote on this bill, and that is House File 861 as amended. I have a couple of quick comments, and then I'll have the last word with Representative Hansen. Will have the last word on this bill. So, members, I appreciate the good discussion that we've had today. We're doing two things. We are moving quickly on a deficiency payment so that contractors can get their work done, and we send a message to the state that we take this issue and matter very seriously and are providing the appropriate agencies with the resources they need to expedite driver testing, driver's licenses, tabs, all of these important services that our constituents have come to rely on. We are also taking a very significant initial step to reimburse deputy registrars who have really received, who have suffered through the bulk of some of the problems here. And this is a substantial amount of money, but it's also a fiscally responsible step to take as well. And my last comment, members, is we have, you know, heard a lot about past administrations and past mistakes. But I hope today we're turning over a new leaf, a new chapter that will be more positive and more successful. And I will say that I feel hopeful because in the last month alone, the governor has personally met with a subset of transportation leaders who have been tasked with overseeing this process. Representative Torkelson and I and Representative Baker have been at these meetings representing the House. We've had the appropriate senators there as well. Members of agencies, deputy registrars have also had a session with the governor. We've met with them 3 times in a month. So this governor and this administration are taking this issue very, very seriously. We did not have that level of engagement in the past. So that alone, I think, is cause for hope. But as has been pointed out today, we have to also make sure that we as a House of Representatives and elected officials stay very, very engaged and very, very on top of this issue. We have the commission that was set up last year. That will continue to meet. We will continue, again, Minlar's discussions in this committee as we have 2 hearings prior to this. So, but this is a significant step, and we should not underestimate it. And I want to offer my personal thanks to Chair Hansen for his leadership in bringing this bill forward. Representative Hansen, you have the last word.
I think everyone acknowledges this has been a painful process for everyone involved. And you can read about that pain in the legislative audit report from last week. So Minnesotans, I think, are the ultimate judge of whether things are working. And in order to get things working again, we have to work on problem solving. And I think that folks are tired of the finger pointing and the back and forth. They know that this was a disaster. And Representative Runbeck, I'll use the word disaster. But I think it's an opportunity for a reset. And looking at this bill as amended provides all of us with the chance to recognize that there was a responsibility to make the deputy registrars whole, that we're trying to give some dollars back to them for the cost that they spent and time and energy trying to make this work on the front line with Minnesotans. It also is dollars, so we're not, as Representative Elkins said, starting and stopping and starting and stopping, that hopefully we're not continuing to go back and forth in terms of starting and stopping, that we need to start turning the corner on this. And I think all of us have skepticism because of the experience we've been through. And I think Minnesotans have skepticism. But we were sent here to make some decisions. We have to try to take that risk. And the risk for taking that reset, providing these dollars to get the job done and to recognize the job done by deputy registrars, should make this start to make this work better for Minnesotans. So I'd ask for your support and look forward to working with you as this moves through the process.
Thank you very much, Representative Hansen. So I will renew my motion that House File 861, as amended, be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, members, and thank you for a very good discussion. I have one quick announcement before we adjourn, slightly early, so thank you for that, members. We will have our first field hearing in St. Cloud on Friday. We have transportation provided for committee members to round trip. Some of you, of course, may be staying in St. Cloud, so that's, of course, good for you. But we will be leaving here between 8 and 8:15. And please let, on Friday morning, in front of the state office building, there's a bus. Please let our committee administrator, Mr. Howe, know that you are coming. If you are coming but have alternative transportation, we would like you to communicate that to Mr. Howe as well. So I'm looking forward to this day. We have, we'll start with a tour of the new Flyer facility, and then we'll go to the St. Cloud City Hall.
What did you want to do?
Okay, and we're figuring out lunches for the committee. So, but we will start at noon, end at 3, and look forward to a nice, warm Central Minnesota welcome up in St. Cloud. So please communicate again your intentions to Mr. Howe. No meeting on Thursday. Again, members, no meeting on Thursday. So you've got a nice bit of time before session on Thursday. So with that, members, we are adjourned.